Welcome to Cloudlandia,
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson, I've seen you more than I've seen the sun over the last week.
Isn't that amazing? I was just thinking that same thing. What a week.
Yeah.
This from our floating...
I think Monday was the only week we missed, so...
No, Monday we saw each other. We were floating on the water on Monday.
Oh, yes. That's right. That's exactly right. So it's 8 days. It's 8 days running.
Isn't that something?
And that's a good
thing. Here we are. What a week.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, what a week. It was really a good week, actually. So much good stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, thank you for yesterday. That was a treat.
That was nice. Great to have. It just dawned on me on Friday, that I had my event and realizing we don't have to go. He doesn't have to go anywhere to be part of this. I could just say, hey, you want to come on? This is the greatest. So for people listening, I had my I have a group of real estate agents. We had a mastermind that normally we've done in person. That was the last group, actually, Dan, that I was with in person. We always, on the last weekend of February every year, we do our GoGo Agent Academy. And so that was the last live group in Orlando that I saw. But I realized this week I have not been more than 90 minutes by car away from the Four Seasons Valhalla in 1 year now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, two things about that. Your group is the last live group that I've spoken to in Toronto. We did that at the convention center a couple of years ago.
That's right. Yeah.
I would double your time away because it's 3 hours to our cottage. So that's the furthest I've done.
That's something. So let's go through some of the things. We had our second annual Free Zone Frontier Summit. Instead of being at the Boulders, we were live in Cloudlandia.
Actually, it was our third. We did one the first year in Chicago, and it was in February, and people stayed downtown, and I think we were at the Chicago Athletic Club on Michigan Avenue. And
that's right. There must have been some reason why I wasn't there, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound like me at all.
No. So that was the third. And I have to tell you, when our team got together afterwards, we said, I said, first of all, I want to tell you something. What I was thinking, I'm talking to my team now, so I'm recounting what I said to my team. The Boulders, everything is so spread out that I probably spend 6 hours of my summit walking.
Yes, exactly.
from one place to another. And I said, and it was easy to get lost. So I probably did more walking than I need have. And what I am putting an emphasis more and more on with my team regarding the Zoom workshops. I said, bring them in early. Like I said, let's open the doors 10 minutes early.
Yeah.
And I said, leave them to talk to each other at breaks. And we do a break every hour, our normal in-person habit back 30 years is that the 10 minute break at the end of every hour is important because I think people kind of integrate what they've learned during that. So I give them 50 hours where they have to, 50 minutes where they have to focus, and then 10 minutes where they get together, you know, and they talk and everything like that. And I said, I think they're kind of filled up after 50 minutes, you know. You know, and now they need to walk it off or talk it off or, you know, eat it off or whatever they want to do during that 10-minute period. And I have not found anyone else. Well, I haven't been, you know, I was 2 years, and it was, you know, we were in the 50-minute mark when we finished. You know, we were in the 50-minute. We were in the 6 Jackson time period when we finished up yesterday. But, you know, I just find I go to places, you know, like Abundance 360, and it's like 2.5 hours, and it's just nonstop.
No break, right.
No break. And I said, I was filled up at the 50-minute mark and had to put in more time. So it's just an interesting thing how other people do it. But we found that you know, have them thinking, have them talking, then room is talking, take a break, and then repeat, you know, and then repeat.
I really liked that format. That was really, that was good. And being, you know, I mean, just the fact, listen, we had a whole week where literally we would have been, like, imagine that week. I would have still had all of those events, but it would have been impossible for me to be at 100K and then come back in time for my event here in Orlando, but I was able to pull all of them off.
So you started on Friday night? Did you start on Friday?
No, we just did Saturday. That was it. Saturday, normally, okay. Normally we would have done Friday and Saturday live, but we just did one day from Concentrate, you know, kind of virtual, which was good.
Yeah. But, you know, this is a great experiment that's happening globally. Where never in history has the world kind of been shut down. I mean, not all countries are doing it the same way. And even in the United States, not all the states are doing it the same way. But I think everybody has the experience of seeing things being slowed down or stopped altogether. And we're talking about 8 billion, you know, 8 billion people, you know, you can't get from here to there. And, you know, things have stopped. And I got to believe that it's unpredictable what people are going to do with this experience. I know they're going to do something with this experience, but I think it's unpredictable. And I think that the people in control, you know, governments and their regulatory police forces may think that they know what's going to happen, but I got a feeling they don't know what's going to happen. I think that there's a mood.
We see what is happening.
There's a mood change going on here, you know, and it's, you know, it's an individuals are, you know, they're having a shift of mood, but I think, in collective force, they're having a shift of mood too. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, let's say, over the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. You know, well, I know one way it already is playing out is we had two separate realtors in the group yesterday, one from North Carolina and one from Florida, who said they both had clients who their company that they work for told them that they can keep their job, they can work from wherever, that they're never coming back to the office, they don't have to ever come back to the office. And so they decided one to move to North Carolina, one to move to Florida. Because if you can do your job from anywhere. So much of why we live in certain areas geographically has been primarily because of work for most people, right? That's why cities become cities, because the commerce of it, you know, the convenience of being in proximity of all the people who are buying your stuff, or but the you know, we're seeing the dismantling of the need for physical proximity in almost every category. That's gonna be fundamental.
It's certainly you know, I was thinking I mentioned in passing during the 10 times call that I have this member of the U.S. Congress, you know, who's also a strategic coach client, because he has a, you know, really growing, you know, growing, expanding business. And they have some rules on, you know, how close he can be to that while he's a sitting member. But he owns it, you know, and he has good management. So that goes. And then he belongs to some, you know, very interesting think tanks. He's on the conservative side of things. And so he belongs to a think tank. And then I was telling him that at our summit, the Free Zone Summit on Tuesday, that Peter Zion had come and talked to us, come virtually and talk to us. And he says, oh my golly, he says, is there any chance, he says, I have this organization where a lot of the people have read his book and they would love to have him come and see. Do you think there's any chance? And I said, well, Eleonora set up you know, his presentation to us, so I'll just have Eleonora give a talk. And so I've just connected these two people. But the thing is that if it required, you know, Peter to travel, and they had their meeting that was in a particular location, there would be all sorts of complexity. But here it's just an agreement that on a certain day in a certain time period, he'll zoom in and talk to them. So that's already underway. Then, you know, they're going back and forth. They've already been introduced. But I wouldn't have offered our services as in-between people if it involved travel. With Zoom, it's pretty easy to be the intermediary. But with travel, I said, geez, you know, he's a busy guy. You're a busy guy. Everybody's busy guys, busy gals. And it's probably 10 times more detailed, 10 times more possibility of it not happening. But here, I'm pretty sure it could happen. Everybody could rearrange their schedule, you know, and make it happen. So,
That's awesome.
That's what I was talking about last week, about the law of gravity of travel, you know, that it's immediately the gravitational laws of travel mean that it's probably only 20% as good as if you could do the whole thing virtually, like your last week. You couldn't have done your last week by travel. You'd have been worn out. Well, you wouldn't have even entertained the possibility.
Well, the only thing that would have gone for it is that if the Free Zone Frontier Summit was in Arizona again, that would have been the way, because we could have gone to Arizona, done the Free Zone, and then gone right into 100K up the street. But even if it was in Chicago, we could have technically made it happen. You do Tuesday and then fly on Wednesday to get to Phoenix and be there, but it would have, but I wouldn't have
a lot of bother though.
To my summit. Yeah. It would have been a lot of bother. You're absolutely right. Like that's what's so, even locally things, you know, like you look at, you know, I know that your Saturdays are, you've got your Saturday morning routine and your haircut and your Whole Foods and all of that, but
Bruce and Terry's,
and the fact that you could, you know, just pop in at 3 o'clock and be done at 4 o'clock. And have interesting conversation. Anyway, that's the fun. That's where the thing is, that you really, you're removing all of the friction from things. I find that my capacity to do things, to do more, is there because of all the, there's no friction around it.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I was taking a look at I went on Google Maps on Friday night. I had an hour, and I went on Google Maps, and I found I don't know if I've ever talked to you about, but one of my great freedom breakthroughs when I was growing up on the farm is I got to go into the woods alone by myself. When I was 6 years old, I could go into the woods. The condition being our family dog had to be with me because I had an in with the dog. You know, I really treated the dog really well. You know, he wasn't just a dog. You know, he got to go places with me, so he would go there. And I said, I'm going to see what the woods looks like. So I went to Google Map, and, you know, after about 10 minutes, zeroing in, I found
Google Earth.
I actually found the woods. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Whoever bought it, I mean, this is 65 years ago. So whoever bought it, just cleared it of all buildings, and they just converted the entire, farm property to,
farmland,
you know, to fields.
Yeah.
And then, but the woods is still there. So I went back and I looked at the woods, and then because I used to go and cross the fence line into the next woods, I went, two times to the right and two times to the left. So I had five woods. And then I just started going out and looking at the 2 or 3 miles, you know, of where I'd grown up. And, you know, there was a main state highway there, but there was this little town called Berlin Heights, Ohio. So I went to Wikipedia and I looked up Berlin Heights, and it had never been more than 1,000 people. To this day, it's about maybe 500 or 600 people, but in its entire history, it had never been more than 1,000 people. But I remembered once I saw this ruins of a railway bridge in Berlin Heights. And this is the point that I'm kind of make, that in the early 1900s, let's say 1910, that if you lived in Cleveland, you could take a train, an electric train. These were interurbans. This was the actual name for them. And they're like streetcars. You know, they're like streetcars because they were electrically powered. And you could go to Berlin Heights, Ohio. So if you lived in the city of Cleveland, you could go to Berlin Heights because they had a station there. And the bridge actually cut through, and that bridge was taking people to the town that I grew up in. And I remember talking to my mother when she was a child. She said when she was 10 years old, she had taken the interurban to Norwalk. And then I said, well, how extensive was this? And then I got a map of the interurban railway. And
where you could go.
You could get from anywhere to almost anywhere else in 1910, not using cars. You weren't taking cars, but on the interurban highway. And then by 1930, it was all gone. It was all gone, the interurban network. It lasted for about 30 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was really, really amazing. But the whole map, it just showed all these towns in Ohio and you know, there were other states who had this connection. But then at a certain point, unless you owned a car and you drove the car, you couldn't get to any of those places.
Yeah. Did you, was it that one of your big coming of age things of getting to explore on the train or the interurban yourself?
No, I was born in 44 and that it was all.
Okay. Oh,
all
so that was.
It was
so
by
there
the
was
third.
No
remember
way to get
who killed?
From...
Remember who killed Roger Rabbit?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that the whole plot line there is that Los Angeles had this amazing interurban train system, and this is in the 1900 to 1930, and the whole plot, which is actually a true plot, is that General Motors started creating false front companies. And these false front companies would buy the interurban companies. It wasn't a government-run system. It was a privately-run system. And Los Angeles maybe had three or four companies who controlled the interurban electric railways. And so they... But they were, you know, they weren't real profitable. They were useful, but not profitable. And General Motors, through their front companies, would buy these interurban companies. And then what they did, if the schedule said it was a half hour, it was 20 minutes between trains, General Motors would say, change it next month. There's 25 minutes between trains. And then 6 months later, there's 30 minutes between trains. And then people said, you know, takes too long. We're waiting too long. And they just scheduled them out of existence. And then they failed.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they bought up all the tracks and they tore out all the tracks. General Motors, these front companies, tore out all the tracks. They
wow.
said, yeah. Yeah, and that's the plot line behind the movie Who Killed Roger Rabbit. It's an actual true story. I mean, it's an actual reality, and they did it in the other cities, and that's why the United States, most of the cities don't have really good public transportation because General Motors didn't want
wow.
them to have good.
Wow, no good alternative.
Yeah.
This is something, isn't it? The whole... All the regulation against improvement, you know, like we're looking, but now it's almost like there's no, the resistance has arisen, right? The voice of the people wouldn't allow stuff.
I don't know. I don't know how you get a hint if you're a regulator, you know, your government regulator. I don't know how you get a handle on this one, you know, because first of all, I don't think they even know it's happening.
Right. You know? Yeah, you wonder, right? Like that whole...
Because I don't think this is a mode of communication and teamwork and collaboration that lends itself well to how government bureaucrats build their careers.
Right. Yeah, you know, because fundamentally the whole thing has changed. With everybody being, you know, there's certainly more, anybody, citizens have an out, have a, you know, a platform to, you know, create resistance and shine lights on things and make real things happen. I think it's swinging, though. I just noticed yesterday or 2 days ago in the news that Hasbro has canceled Mr. Potato Head. That in the,
I read that. I read
after in the interest you, of
after
gender
you were my Paul Revere on this one.
Yeah,
so you told me. I said what? So that night, that very night, Thursday evening, I went home and I read three articles on Hasbro canceling Mr. Potato Head. I was devastated, I have to tell you. You know me, I'm pretty good with change. I'm pretty good with sudden news, but I had a mournful end of Thursday.
I mean, I don't understand like what's going on with this, this is what I'm saying, this uprising of the name now, it's even got the name of cancel culture, that that everything, they're rewriting everything. Like, what I just don't understand, how is Mr. Potato Head a problem?
Well, it brings up, it brings up a really good topic.
Yeah.
The main thesis, like a particular author's name is being mentioned more and more today, and it's George Orwell. You know, and George Orwell is famous mainly for the book 1984 and the movies it's the total control of government over what people are allowed to know and what people are allowed to think. Okay. Yeah. And so a lot of people are pulling Orwell off the shelf and rereading the novel. And then they're starting to read other things that Orwell, and this is a British guy. He was British, but he mainly grew up in India, and his father was a British, kind of a British, authority in a part of India, and Orwell himself spent a lot of his time, but he was a writer, and he observed things, and he was basically writing about the end of the British Empire, which kind of ended in the 20 years after the Second World War. They had been an empire, and they really, aren't an empire anymore. They have a thing called the Commonwealth, but it's more it's more of a family reunion sort of thing than it is any, doesn't have any political power. But Orwell is that, is mind control, really. It's about mind control. And one of the ways that you control people's minds is that you remove their memory of what happened in the past. And one of the ways you do that is you look at the present circumstances and anything that doesn't agree with the ruling philosophy, we're going to destroy that statue. We're going to change that name. We're going to remove this fact. And Mr. Potato Head obviously became a major threat to present thinking. That Mr. And it was the Mr. that and if you looked at Mr. Potato Head, it wasn't Mrs. Potato Head. You could tell it wasn't a Mrs. Potato Head.
Right.
It was a Mr. Potato Head.
There is a Mrs. Potato Head. There is a Mrs.
Yeah.
There's a Mr. And Mrs. Potato Head. Yeah. No.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even in, it's an actual character though. Like, in Toy Story, Mr. Potato Head, that's Mr. Potato Head to you. So how are we like, how is that? Like, this is what I really don't understand is what's going on, Like, how is it Santa, you've got Santa Claus is a man. I don't know. Are we going back? Are all characters? I don't know.
Well, it's there's a starting point for this, actually, and it's one person, and I've read a lot about him for about the last 15 years, and his name was Antonio Gramsci. And Antonio Gramsci was a writer and a political activist in Italy, and he was a Marxist. Okay, so he, and he had been observing what had happened to Marxism since Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, and that was 1840, I think 1848, Karl Marx. And that's sort of, you know, in the Marxist world, the communist world, that's kind of like the beginning act. That's kind of like the beginning thing. And Marx was in, I think, in Brussels. He lived in Brussels, Belgium, and he wrote this. And it's very short, actually. I read it last week. You can read the Communist Manifesto.
I have a copy.
And it's very provocative, you know, and Marx was a very good writer. And he was describing what he observed that capitalism was doing to the world. And he really, we have Marx to thank for the term capitalist, because he's the one who kind of coined the term. You know, the person who names the game owns the game. Well,
yeah,
he sort of
well,
named
when
the game.
Well, when you add an ism onto anything.
And so that's 1840s, 1850s. You jump ahead 19-teens or 1920s, and this Marxist in Italy, very young, he was about 25 in 1920, by the name of Gramsci, he said, you know, we're approaching this wrong. He said, first of all, the workers are never going to go for this. The workers are never going to go. And I mean, you know, Marx and everybody else, you know, in the future, the workers who work in the factories will own the factories. And you know, and he says, you know, it's never going to work. And Gramsci said, you know why? He said, because there are some, and this is the word he uses, hegemonic structures, hegemony, you know, hegemony. And he said that what capitalism has is hegemonic structures, and there's some major ones. And one of them, for example, is the school system. The school system is a hegemonic structure. He said the mediums of public news are hegemonic structures. The news media is a hegemonic structure. And then he said, but the one, and religion, Catholic, especially Christianity, is a hegemonic structure. And he said, but the biggest one is the family. The family is the most powerful hegemonic structure of all. And it's based on a man and a woman get together. They commit to each other for a lifetime, and they raise their children. And that's that family structure. So he said, this is what we have to do. We have to start infiltrating the hegemonic structures. We have to do a long march through the institutions. And he says, it'll take 5 or 6 generations, but we will continually alter their memory of the past. So that's why Mr. Potato Head, just got assassinated by Antonio Gramsci.
Well, Dr. Seuss was canceled today.
Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss is canceled today. So I didn't read all the rest of it, but that's that's the next thing. But you know, these are all the kind of
I hope Pogo has made his will.
Oh my goodness! Exactly.
He's sort of androgynous. You know, Pogo was sort of androgynous, though. You know,
yes.
It was kind of in the. As a matter of fact, I'm going to walk across the room here. I'm going to look at something on the wall of my basement here at 39, and I'm looking at a piece of original artwork. It was a present to one of Bab's aunts. And it was original artwork from Post Hall Syndicate. And it's three characters. Mm-hmm. And it's the original artwork from an actual Pogo cartoon. And it's best wishes to Rosemary from Walt Kelly.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's something. Yeah, I love, I mean, that, you know, I love old original cells like that. See, there's a lot. It was very popular for a while. I haven't seen it as much.
Dean, can I ask you a question? Is the shock of the cancellation of Mr. Potato Head, is this the decisive act that's going to drive you to the barricades?
That's exactly right. No, it's fully. I'm just shutting the door in Cloudlandia right behind me. Leave the mainland to be, and just like completely settle into Cloudlandia.
Yeah.
I wonder. You know, the whole thing is. It really does. The more that we talk about this, about Cloudlandia as a really new territory, a new civilization kind of thing, it fits so much, you know, that there are definitely new rules in Cloudlandia, and that's definitely where we're headed. You can set up shop there. I've been in Cloudlandia for like literally every single thing that I have done this year to earn any amount of money could literally have been done from Namibia if I had access to Cloudlandia. I could do it from a Namibian outpost with my access to Cloudlandia. It does not matter. And that's new. That is new.
It is
to the
brand
extent
new.
That, you know, when I talked about it before, that I still remember 1997 when, you know, GQ or some magazine, mainstream magazine, you know, embedded an author or a writer in a New York City apartment to see if they could survive a week in a New York City apartment with their only means of access, the internet.
Yeah.
And they, you know, stumbled around and they found a, you know, a Chinese food place online that they could order by email, you know, to get food delivered to them. And I mean,
you kind of knew it had to be a Chinese restaurant, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, you know, but that now it's like, you know, it's such a, of course, the real
Here's my take on it. The Walt Kelly thing is strictly a mainland. It's a mainland thing. Okay. And my belief is that the entire political structure now of what's been going on in the world is essentially a mainland form of entertainment. Actually, it's a form of entertainment. It doesn't matter who wins, doesn't matter who loses. It's all entertainment.
Yeah.
And that the real action is actually taking place in Cloudlandia.
Uh-huh.
But the anger and the outrage is that the opportunities in mainland are diminishing. But the people most involved in the fights don't know that there's another world already in existence. And the brightest people, the most creative people, the most cooperative people have already jumped into Cloudlandia. And now they're just looking back at the mainland and say, you know, there's some good property in mainland. Where if you don't have to travel, this is really a great place I mean, everybody physically, by the fact that you have a body and you have to be in the mainland somewhere. But now you really, really, I mean, you can really get choosy now. You can really get picky about where in mainland you want to be. And it wouldn't be in the, by the way, Dean, it would not be, or Dean Jackson would not be in Namibia. It would be in Winter Haven.
That's true. But you know why I say Namibia is funny? Because when Joe Polish and I did the first I Love Marketing conference, we did a live stream of it, and we had two people streaming from Namibia.
Yeah.
And so we would start every morning by having the whole audience turn to the cameras and say, "Good morning, Namibia." And it's really interesting
with my podcast with Joe, the 10 Times Talk, one of the biggest collective gatherings of all the listeners of the 10 Times Talk was in Kazakhstan.
Ah, interesting.
Kazakhstan. And I really had to go. So I knew it was one of the stands. You know, there's about 10 of them. And they're, you know, they're kind of between India and Russia. They're between the Middle East and everything that's properly considered. And they listened. And what they did is that they had a mastermind group. And what they would do is they would listen to the podcast, and then they would record them, and then they would transcribe them. And then everybody's homework was to read the topics that Joe and I had discussed, and then they had entrepreneurial mastermind group who talked about it. But it really struck me how the world had really changed, you know. And
I love it.
Here's an interesting fact. We've had clients in Strategic Coach probably since around 1992. So we started the program in 1989. And I think our very first client was in 1992. And so from then, for the entire history of Strategic Coach, up until what COVID started, we had had 26 clients from Australia in Strategic Coach. Mm-hmm. So since September, we've now created Coach Global. Virtual Global, and it's the Strategic Coach, and it's always just virtual. It's never in person.
Yeah.
And since then, we have five more Australians who just signed up since September than we had in the first 31 years.
Wow, that's great, isn't it?
It's now a market. And now we're creating live marketing on Zoom to Australia. And the reason is they don't have to travel.
Right.
I mean, even in Australia, from Perth on the west to Sydney on the east is the same as LA to New York. I mean, it's the same distance. The only difference is in the United States, there is actually something in between New York and Los Angeles. And in Australia, there is nothing in between Sydney and Perth.
The outback. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. And you start to really, when you embrace that, though, this is what I was saying that, when you brought up the no gravity, it takes a while to for that to sink in.
Yeah.
That there's really nothing. When I said that out loud the other day, that there's no, I literally could have done everything that I've done from Namibia. It doesn't matter where we are.
It's interesting. If you look at world history, there humans as recognizably humans, the number is bandied about when can we say that the crossover to humans was, where we weren't Neanderthals, we weren't some other thing that was humanoid, but we were actual humans. And it's about 100,000 years. Mm-hmm. years. But it took pretty well up until the last, probably last, I'm just going through my history right here, probably up until about 1,000 years ago. So out of the 100,000 years, 99% of that time had to pass before you could have a city with a population of 1 million people. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it took 90. You know what the problem was? You couldn't have your food source more than 3 miles away from the center
oh, right.
of the city. Okay.
Yes.
And if you didn't have farms all around the city, you couldn't have a population, except if you were on a really good river, where the, you know, you could move much more quickly. And that's why, you know, Egypt, of course, with the Nile, and London with the Thames, and
But
if you looked at all the places that became big cities, they were, first of all, they were right in the middle of very fertile agricultural land, and they had really good transportation. They had road system, and you know, Rome itself was the center, but they weren't There weren't 1 million people living in the city of Rome.
What are the natural resource equivalents in Cloudlandia? I mean, it would be high speed, you know, I mean, access, internet access is one, certainly.
Well, I think that, I think Zoom is, because Zoom,
yeah.
With a year under my belt of using nothing but, it's not annoying me. They haven't done anything that annoys me. They haven't.
Right, it just gets out of the way, right?
Yeah. They haven't created friction in their process.
Yes.
I mean, you can wish for more dimensions,
yes.
but not much. Not much.
Right. Yeah.
That's why all the talk about. You know, the other day at Genius and then at Abundance 360 about how virtual reality and augmented reality is going to just wipe out Zoom. And I said, yeah, but it's good enough.
Zoom is not broken.
I mean, if it takes me 20 minutes to put my uniform on for virtual reality, I'm not going to do it.
Right. And that's part of the thing. Like, these virtual environments. I agree with you 100%. I just think like it'd be, you know, to have bigger, the more high def screens, like a monitor, if you could have that, a bigger,
yeah.
bigger monitor, clearer camera, those little improvements would make it more immersive even, but yeah, I think just bigger images would be more valuable than these avatar images, you know, fully immersive avatar images. That's not the real thing.
Well, here's the thing. Why would I want less of the reality of Dean Jackson?
That's what I was thinking. I don't want to be less than that. That's right.
Yeah. In other words,
yeah.
I like, I like who Dean is. I like when he raises his eyebrows. I like,
you're right.
You know, I like everything about it. Why would I want less of that? I mean, and everything like that. And, I'm trying to understand what the motivation is. I can't get
right.
my hand full. Now, here's the thing. Here's where I see VR really really huge. I see it absolutely huge. First of all, the military just loves this stuff because right. you can practice and rehearse. You can practice yes. and rehearse. In other words, you can create virtual reality, of a place that you're going to invade, a place that yes. you're going to make a raid on. I totally understand. I totally grasp it. And the more realistic and the more that you can do it, I can see.
Yeah.
The other thing is, for example, security work, where you can actually reproduce the whole thing and you can, you know, the thing that you have to defend, and it's real time, but you can actually go into every nook and cranny of the things that you're trying to protect. Or maintenance, you know, think of maintenance, where you'd be able to, where it's very, very important that all the electricity is working, all the plumbing's
yes.
working, all the, and everything like that. So my sense is that it will go really, really big for the purpose of very specific practical situations that are very costly if it requires people to travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Training and education, training, skill training, education training, mm-hmm. totally get it. But I don't see it for what you and I are doing. It.
Yeah. I think when it's a combination of physical things, I think you're right, actually. Now, I can imagine if we have glasses, because I just think glasses will be faster adapted than the headgear. But if we did have glasses that I'm thinking about if for home or any kind of repair stuff that needs to be done, that you could put on the glasses, there's a QR code on the actual thing that you're trying
yeah.
to fix that brings
yeah.
up instructions and a video or somebody prompting you, an AI prompting you and what to do next. That would be very helpful. It's about even some of the things like Phil, the cosmetic surgeon in our group, does.
Phil Miller.
Yeah. Some yeah. of those, the,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
That was pretty interesting where you could get inside the ear and see what that's all about.
Yeah, it's funny though. We were preparing for Abundance 360 had a whole day of more or less virtual reality where you had to use Oculus, to do it. And I've never used Oculus. I don't play games. I play life instead
yeah.
of games.
right.
I play life. I like life. You know, life is interesting. Anyway, and Glenn Roberts, who has been our tech chief for 25 years, he came over and he walked Babs and I, first Babs and then me, through how to use it and everything else. And
yeah.
I was about 3 minutes into it. I said, this feels really stupid. This feels really stupid. This. Ooh, I'm getting stupider by the minute.
Right.
I am fading. You know, it's Hal in
Space Odyssey.
2001. You know, he starts singing a song that he learned, you know, Daisy, you know, because he's losing all of his accent. I feel that I am not as smart as I was when I started. I'm getting really stupid.
Before I put this contraption on my head.
Yeah.
Right.
This is making me stupider than the machine. This is how they're going to take over. They're going to make us stupider than they are.
Yeah. That's amazing. No, I'm more of a fan of, I think more like the holodeck is what's
yeah.
going to be. We're going to have bigger immersive screens more than.
But if you make people, I just don't think making people learn hows
Yeah.
Given that we're the who, not how originators,
right.
And evangelists here, I just can't see how anything that makes you learn more hows,
yeah.
where there's a complete spectrum for people who are born for this to people, they won't get this really good in 5 years. You know, there's
right.
this complete spectrum. I just don't see how that will be popular. I just don't see how it will be popular.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Zoom, you get it. It gets out of the way. It's like immediately there you are. There's the other people. You see them. You're talking to them. You hear them. You don't need to how anything about that. You just be.
No. And yeah, I mean, you gave me the time yesterday. You gave me the time yesterday, and I said 5 minutes beforehand I'll show up, and 5 minutes
yes,
beforehand,
that's right.
I showed up, and I was there,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah,
and it was so easy, you know. I mean, it was so easy.
Yeah, especially when that's why I get my Zoom domain, like my Zoom with Dean domain name, because that even removes anybody having to know a meeting number or a, you know, long URL to go to. It's easy to just say, just go to zoomwithdean.com and I'll let you in. That's it.
Can I ask you a question? And I don't know the answer to it. So if that, you know, I'm with Google, when you Google yourself,
yes.
Does it know that it's you and therefore it populates the pages with everything related to you? In other words, it's kind of flattering you. This is for
let's
everybody.
Experiment.
Or
let's experiment
Google,
right now.
Yeah, Google me.
I'm going to do that right now.
Yeah, just Dan Sullivan.
Dan Sullivan. Okay, well, there's who comes up for me. Is Daniel Scott Sullivan is an American politician and lawyer serving as the junior U.S. Senator from Alaska since 2015. Then we'll scroll down that Dan Sullivan seems to dominate the front page here of everything. There's one. You're at the first non-that Dan Sullivan entry is strategiccoach.com, our team, where you are listed as the founder of. So you're the last entry on the of the real ones.
That's really funny because when I'm doing it, Senator Sullivan shows up at the bottom of page two. I have the first two pages all to myself.
This is interesting. So what happens when you do Dean Jackson?
Let me check. Hold on a second.
Because for me, I dominate all these pages. You're right. Maybe it's just flattering us.
You're right there, Dean.
Okay. Yeah, I'm two pages deep, and it's all me. Oh, no, there's someone from there's a minor league baseball player called Dean Jackson who shows up at the very end of page two.
Well, you certainly got two-thirds of the first page. You get down to about the two-third mark before there's any other Dean Jackson.
Uh-huh. So there we go. So it's
he's a custom wood designer.
Okay,
and
there you go.
There. Now you have except for one item, you have the whole first page. And let's see, page two.
Yeah, it's interesting. For a while, I had a, because I don't have business cards, but I had a business card that Jesse, my designer, made for me. That was the little Google search bar with my name in it and a hand, the finger over the I feel lucky button. That was my business card for for a while.
Yeah, so you have almost the whole first page and 2/3 of the second page.
Well, there you go.
But I don't.
Well, there's probably more Dan Sullivan's than Dean Jackson's.
Could be.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But why it should show up so heavy for just me?
Well, because you're there. I think that's.
Yeah,
the thing.
I mean, that's
we're
what I'm getting.
Building our
at,
own reality.
What I'm getting at. I know flattery works in the mainland. It works in Cloudlandia too.
Yes. Well, maybe that's Google knowing your preferences. That's the.
They're not incorrect there.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. We're gone to the bottom of something.
There's as much complexity to Cloudlandia as there is to the mainland, I'll tell you.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Except in Cloudlandia, you can do it shapes to match what you really want.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the greatest thing. You're on utopia.
Yeah, it's easier for you to clear 40 acres of Cloudlandia than it is to clear 40 acres of the mainland.
Oh, man, that is the best. 40 acres and a mouse. 40 acres and a clicker or something. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That is funny.
Yeah, but it's fun. I think my first indication that people have a capability in any area of their life is that they've developed a sense of humor about it.
Right.
Yeah, and one of the things that I find about all the there isn't, except for the two of us, of course, I don't notice that the tech people who are, pushing Cloudlandia capabilities really have a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have almost a religious zeal about what they're doing. Well, I've tested out religion in the mainland, and I don't have any further need of it in Cloudlandia.
Right. That's it. Self-appointment. You get your own version. You're the mayor of your own Cloudlandia experience.
I got a feeling that Cloudlandia is closer to how God actually operates.
Oh, I think you're probably right. That's the best. All things are possible.
Yeah, I don't think he's big on travel.
That's the best. I love it.
Okay, Dean. Okay,
well, this has been a delight. Yes, I will talk to you next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.